Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It's the Disruption Zone. I am Leland Conway. You can download this podcast for free from Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio's app, or Google Play. Just search the Disruption Zone. They'll deliver brand new episodes right to you. Today's guest is Congressman Thomas Massey. We're talking about the CDC deciding that it's the nation's landlord, basically interfering with private property rights over COVID. We also talk about all kinds of other things, understanding Donald Trump, criticizing Donald Trump, and why actually Donald Trump probably respects that, whether or not the president will win re-election, and many other topics in this one. We start off talking about comparing home broadcast studios and the magic of television on this episode of The Disruption Zone. So there's just a big screen behind you, and then you just set it however you want.
Yes.
Okay.
And ironically, what I project on the big screen is my farm, which is 3 miles from here.
I was going to ask you, I haven't seen, because I don't have network TV. I just have Hulu right now. So I haven't seen any of your latest TV interviews. So I was like, do you put your farm behind it? Because your farm's gorgeous.
Yeah, I call it the Shire. I put that up there. Or if people want me to be in D.C., I'll put the D.C. background.
Yeah.
The last time we had a hearing in Congress, I put the hearing room in the background.
Oh, okay.
I think I confused a lot of my colleagues who weren't allowed in the room.
Right.
Like, the Democrats literally won't allow us to attend in person.
Right.
They've got some rule that there can only be 5 of each party in the room.
Right.
And so I just put a picture of the hearing room behind me, and they're all scratching their heads like,
yeah.
How'd he get in there?
Yeah. That's cool. I've done Fox hits, like, a couple times where they'll put the city of Louisville or whatever behind me. And like one time I did it from Colorado, but Leland Vittert got confused because they told him I was in Colorado, but I asked for the Louisville background. Yeah. And so it's like what? But it's just funny how TV can do that. It can just make you appear to be wherever.
Well, You got to keep the time of day straight, too.
Yeah,
on
exactly.
Our checklist of media questions is, what time of day are you going to air this so we can put the appropriate background?
Right.
I don't want them to think I'm in a time zone on the other side of the planet.
Right.
And I have one other problem with the background here in my studio. This is controversial. Mm. I represent Covington, which is across the river from Cincinnati.
Uh-huh.
And so when I put a background as if I am in Covington,
right,
it shows the Cincinnati skyline.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like, you represent Kentucky. Why do you have the Cincinnati
right.
skyline? Because I'm broadcasting from Kentucky.
Which is where you can see the Cincinnati right. skyline from. You're in Kentucky when you can see it.
If I put the Covington skyline or the Newport skyline in the background,
right.
that would imply I'm on the other
you're,
side
you're
of the
river.
You're
on the other side. You're in Ohio. Yep. Crazy. Back on the Disruption Zone. We're talking with Congressman Thomas Massey. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well.
I wanted to talk about a couple of things. First of all, let's dive into Nancy Pelosi's washing a blowout. To me, this is one of the greatest stories of the 2020 cycle, because I find it to be so analogous of how Democrats operate, right? Be the cause for so much pain and suffering, then, you know, benefit from the pain and suffering, and then blame the fact that you benefit from the pain and suffering on everybody else, which is exactly what Nancy Pelosi did. You have salons shut down needlessly in San Francisco, California. But she's Nancy Pelosi. She's the Speaker of the House. She calls up the salon and is like, I want to get my hair done. Goes in and does it. Doesn't even wear a mask. This poor salon owner who's been closed down for 6 months and is about to lose her business entirely is like, what are you doing? And then she blames the salon owner, saying that she was set up. It's in other words, I was set up so they could catch me breaking the rules I'm telling everybody else they have to live by. It's so how the Democrat Party operates right now.
And by the way, Nancy Pelosi called me a dangerous nuisance on March 27th
mm-hmm.
because I insisted that if grocery store workers and farmers and truckers were showing up for work, then Congress should show up for work and vote too.
Right.
And she said it would be dangerous for us to come to work and vote, but it's not dangerous for her to do her hair. So you've got the hypocrisy of this situation. But also the rules are just so incredibly ridiculous that even the rulemakers can't abide by them.
Right.
And by the way, the hairdressers and the salons, this is one of those segments of the economy, one of those professions that fell through the cracks of all the safety nets that were put
right.
out there.
Right.
Because I have a salon owner or a hairdresser. I don't know if she owns a salon or what, but she's in Kentucky and she does hair in Ohio.
Right.
She didn't qualify for any of the unemployment programs and she didn't qualify for the PPP.
Right.
It was like, and this is the problem with central planning. Oh, we're going to make everybody whole. We've destroyed their careers,
right.
but we're going to make them whole. But the rules didn't account for hairdressers or hairstylists. I don't.
Right.
I'm probably using a politically incorrect.
Yeah, I don't know. I think hairstylists.
I'm not calling them barbers.
Yeah.
But anyways, I couldn't resist. Yesterday on Twitter, I put up. And Facebook, mostly on Facebook, because on Facebook it got 500,000 views. I put up one of those little blue flags and said, marked safe
yeah,
from being set up by a beauty salon today.
I saw that. That's so awesome.
And I'm virtually immune to being set up by a beauty salon if you've seen my hair.
Yeah, you got a little bit of a Rand Paul thing going on there.
I wake
just
up,
does what it wants.
I wake up in the morning and I tell my wife, I said, I need to mess up my hair before it dries.
Right.
And I haven't used a comb in 10 years, and my wife cuts my hair, so I'm virtually immune to this hairdresser virus.
It's so rules for me or rules for thee, but not for me. And when she got caught, instead
blame somebody
of
else.
Yeah, instead of just admitting it and saying, you know what, I screwed up, I'm a hypocrite. We're all hypocrites. That's the thing. We're all hypocrites to some degree. What we just have to do is try to avoid being the biggest hypocrite on the block and admit it when we get caught, you know.
It's human nature to blame somebody else. And by the way, she tried to say she was set up because there were cameras in the salon.
That's security cameras every business has.
And the salon owner said they've been there 5 years. And can you imagine if it was the salon owner's word versus Nancy
yeah.
Pelosi's word?
Right. Right.
Everybody be laughing at the salon owner, especially about the comment that Nancy Pelosi didn't wear a mask.
Right. But even that accusation shows how out of touch she is with the average business owner, especially if you're in downtown San Francisco. You have security cameras in your place of business because you're in a big city that has rampant crime. So you have cameras in your business. Most people's homes now have cameras on the doorbell. Like to act as if nobody has those and that's some kind of big surprise is so ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Let's talk about what the CDC did, because you and I have been warning for some time that we're not really run by democratically elected individuals. We are run by bureaucrats.
Yes.
Who originally were placed there by democratically elected individuals. But because Congress and other elected officials have shirked their duty, they don't ever want to do anything controversial. They like to sit and talk about things, but not actually do things. They've allowed those bureaucrats the authority, almost unhindered, to essentially run our lives. The CDC came out and was like, if it's related to COVID, you cannot evict anybody until December. And everybody kind of does this double take like, whoa, where did you get the authority to rule over property? And it sort of surprised, well, most people didn't care about it. Most people aren't paying attention to it. But those that do care were surprised that the CDC had any kind of authority that even came close to reaching that level. I know I was actually surprised. Like, it shocked me a little bit. What's going on here?
Well, the word bureaucracy doesn't capture what's going on here. So I've coined a new term, bureautocracy.
Okay, I like that.
Because we're being run by bureaus, and the CDC is one of them. If you think the CDC can alter every rental contract in the United States,
right?
Then I mean, you must believe that the USDA can defund the police.
Right, right, I mean, right.
What would be the limit in this case? But I found a silver lining in this ridiculous edict, which I want to get into the edict. But let me mention the silver lining, or the thing that I think is underreported. This, because I've been on conference calls with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Gottlieb and Dr. Birx, and we've had chances to ask them questions. And every time we ask them a question about the mal effects of their policies and are they balancing them, they never quantify the bad outcomes due to the policies they're trying to promulgate at the CDC. Mm-hmm. But here we have, in this eviction moratorium mandate that's come out, the first acknowledgement from the CDC actually contributing to the spread of COVID. Because the rationale for their eviction moratorium is that if people lose their jobs and can't pay their rent and get evicted and move in with somebody else across state lines, that they would be spreading the virus.
Right.
Well, guess who caused them to lose their jobs? It was the CDC with these ridiculous lockdown rules that they proposed. So there you have it.
Right.
They finally acknowledged that what they've been doing is causing...
It's causing jobs.
It's causing the loss of jobs, but more importantly, causing the spread of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
They finally admitted it.
Yeah, that's interesting. The thing that I've said from the beginning of all this is that you're going to have more damage done from the economic fallout than the virus ever dreamed of. And I've been proven right, because the economic damage hasn't yet fully manifested, and it's already destroyed millions of lives in terms of, you know, financial viability and
homelessness.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying in this mandate.
Yeah.
Is that they're causing homelessness, and now they're going to try to do something about the homelessness. Now,
right.
Their solution is going to cause mortgage defaults.
Right. It's going to worsen what's already coming, and that's a commercial real estate crisis, which could then trickle down to residential. Because
some of these are residential properties. A lot of these are residential, not just commercial.
Well, I meant like people just trying to sell their regular house.
Right.
Because what's going to happen, first of all, there's already a coming wave of commercial real estate crisis, because so many businesses are figuring out that they can productively work from home. My CEO, we had a meeting yesterday, and he said, you know what I found out? He said, I used to be against this whole work from home thing. Our company has grown exponentially during this mess. And he said, you guys are good at your job, whether you're here or there, and it hasn't changed our culture one bit. So this is how we're going to go forward in the future. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of companies, and we've got over 500 employees. There's a lot of companies that are saying things like that are going to just move out of large commercial properties into much smaller ones and then let people work from home. That's going to trickle down. You add on top of that, when residential commercial properties can't pay their own mortgage, because nobody who's renting their property has to pay their rent, imagine what's going to happen in January. You know,
here's the other thing. New housing starts are at a high
right
now. And they like to report that as if that's something good.
Right.
What they're not telling you is those are city dwellers who
moving
are building
out.
Houses outside of the city.
Yep.
And as soon as that new house gets finished, they're getting the hell out of the city.
Yeah. Did you see that story that there was pictures of the people standing in line outside the U-Haul office in New York, New York?
Really?
They were standing in line. The line went like a block and a half. People trying to rent a U-Haul to get the hell out of the city. I even heard that in some cases, these people, because they have means, you know, some of these people that are bailing, if you live in these big cities and you have means, you're probably bailing. So they have means. I've heard that some of them have just left like super expensive furniture on the street corner, and whoever wants it can grab it, because they're just trying to get the freak out of Dodge.
And the only time you see lines like that at the U-Haul places are the last week of the semester at college.
Right, right, right. This wasn't on a college campus. So, but yeah, that that's what I guess what I'm saying is, like, I don't think the full economic fallout has fully manifested yet. I think there's more waves to come.
Oh, as, and you and I have talked about this on your podcast months ago. We said this, the lasting effect of what was happening when they said 15 days to slow the spread or flatten the curve or whatever.
What is it, 172 now?
I think so. When they were saying that, I would say these effects are going to be a year, 2 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, there are trees that aren't getting planted.
Yeah.
And orchards that would be growing the fruit 3 years from now. There were dairy cows that were slaughtered because you can only feed these dairy cows and pour their milk out for so long before rationality sets in. There were dairy cows slaughtered that will take 2 or 3 years to replace.
Right.
You don't run the factory another shift to get another dairy cow.
Right.
So this is just one example of the fallout that's still falling out and going to take a while before people realize where we're at.
Yeah. So let's go back to this edict by the CDC.
Yes.
Where do they draw, like, what's the language? Where do they draw the authority to do what they're doing? And why is Trump standing by and letting them do it?
Well, the thing is, he's not standing by. At first, I thought he was standing by.
I'm going to have, can you get your guys at your studio to just bump your volume up just a little bit?
Yeah, is that good?
That's actually really good. Yeah.
Okay, I cranked it up.
Actually, now pull it down just a little bit.
So okay.
We're doing this on the fly. People
will
love it.
1, 2, 3.
There you go. That's perfect.
Okay.
Nailed it.
So, and I may be changing my volume because I get more excited and less excited. And I might be whispering when I tell you that Trump is actually behind this.
No, you're good right now. It's perfect. It's perfect right there.
So at first I thought, wow, this is CDC gone rogue. There's some socialists over there. They're just doing their thing. And then somebody sent me the press release from the White House that looks like AOC wrote it.
Ah, so it's coming from him.
Yeah, so a lot of times...
This is a campaign ploy then.
You know what it is? It's not... It's one level beyond that. It's not four-dimensional chess and it's not checkers, but it's probably just chess.
Right.
And so what's happening is the Democrats are trying to get legislation passed, another CARES Act, if you will. I'm gonna call it the Don't CARES Act. Another Don't CARES Act.
Right.
Because they keep the government or they keep the economy shut down. So they don't care about the economy. They're trying to get another Don't CARES Act passed. And their leverage are these socialist / populist things.
Right.
Like infinite unemployment benefits that pay more than going to work. Right.
Right.
Or another stimulus check or a rental moratorium, you know, eviction moratorium. These are populist things, but at their heart, they are socialist.
Right.
Okay. And I'm saying it's socialist, like on the unemployment, unemployment insurance in this context is a euphemism. I'm not against unemployment insurance.
Right.
But nobody paid into this, so it's not insurance.
Yeah, this isn't the same.
Okay, this is not the same. I want to differentiate that.
This is universal basic income disguised as unemployment. That's what it is.
That is what it is, and it's also a $15 plus minimum wage.
Yeah, and we're proving exactly what you and I and conservatives have argued against universal basic income because it came up in this presidential election with Andrew Yang. We're proving it right now. My wife is trying to hire skilled manual laborers. And when I say skilled manual labor, I mean it's a step above just regular manual labor.
Right.
The pay is pretty decent, and it comes with bonuses. They cannot hire people because those people can stay at home for less because it's not $600 anymore. It's like $300 or whatever. But that still is enough for them to stay home and play Fortnite.
So speaking of Andrew Yang's mincome, universal minimum basic income. I just shorten it to mincome. I got one of those campaign texts from Andrew Yang.
Sweet.
Because I used to live in New Hampshire for a few years.
Right.
But I grew up in Kentucky, you know, went to MIT, started a business, couldn't stand, frankly, living in Taxachusetts. went to the state where the license plate said live free or die.
Right.
And anyways, because I lived there for a while, my somehow they've got me in a database. So Andrew Yang's staff sent me a text saying, hey, can you vote for Andrew Yang? He'll give you $1,000 a month. And I texted back. I said, I really can't live on $1,000 a month. Make it two, and we've got a deal.
Did they respond?
Oh, yeah, they responded. They were like, oh, we understand times are hard, and it's really not much money. Anyways, we went back and forth a few times.
That's so funny.
Where I was negotiating the price of my vote.
Oh, my God.
I was holding out for $2,000 a month. Anyways, they never guaranteed me $2,000 a month, so I didn't vote for Andrew Yang. But if you get $600 for being unemployed every week, that's $2,400 a month.
Right.
So there for several months, the Democrats had achieved, with the acquiescence and support of Republicans, twice of Andrew Yang's campaign promise. They actually met my reserve price for voting for Andrew Yang.
Right.
But anyways, he didn't get the credit, but I'm giving it to the Republicans now. So let's go back to the
CDC.
The CDC.
Right.
And this
edict.
So here's what, it's chess. And so here's what I believe the Trump administration is doing. They're taking the leverage away from the Democrats for pushing for another Don't Cares Act. He's taking that leverage away by taking these popular socialist notions and just doing them himself.
Right.
So think about that. Now, it's at some point, it's like, so if we do the socialism before they do the socialism, are we really winning?
Right.
And maybe the promise is we'll just do it for a little bit.
Right.
Because this edict only lasts until December 31st, right?
Right.
But it gets you past the election.
But which is the political ploy side of it. But isn't this the problem? Like, I was just a guest on a podcast the other day. It hasn't popped in yet, but as soon as it does, I'll let people know what the link is. But we were talking about, like, this. Okay, so the other day I posted, just jokingly said, you know what? I'm tired of complaining. I'm going to run for president 2020. Jokingly. And I put out my platform because I'm sick and tired of the red-blue game, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. Like, I tend to lean libertarian. I'm not registered anything. I'm an independent because I don't want to owe any allegiance to any particular political party, blah, blah, blah. So I put up this platform, and it was basically 8 points. And it was maintain the strongest military in the world, bring them all home, give them a pay raise, and stop being the world's police, right? Project power, don't use it, basically. It was convene a criminal justice reform convention to support well-trained, better-paid, highly vetted police, encourage community policing, no-knock raids except for in extreme circumstances, institute a reward system for whistleblowers to root out corruption in the cops, better training for cops, so on and so forth. Tax breaks for regenerative farming. I thought you would like that one. overhaul federal tax program.
What? Just get all the farming regulations off of me, and I'll pay my taxes.
Well, it's just end all of that so that that small farmers can compete.
Yes.
Is kind of what I was going for. Overhaul the federal tax program. Establish a bottom line basic health care system for people who can't provide for themselves and make that bar pretty high. And then institute free market health care reforms. Establish secure borders, reform immigration, you know, humanely, abolish federal Department of Education, give states block grants in the form, you know, give them the mm-hmm. money, but mm-hmm. require for them to get that money that they allow school choice, and then broaden opportunity zones. Okay, so there you go. That's it in a nutshell.
Be your running mate?
You can take over the top of the ticket, and I'll be your running mate, so I can go out. Look, the point that I'm making, though, is these are nuanced positions, right? This is not standard Republican fodder. It's nowhere near the left, but it's not standard Republican fodder. Why is it that the Republicans do what you're talking about here at the CDC? They have to get the socialism in first, so the other guys, because right now I think that the red team and blue team exist for the sole purpose of opposing the opposite team. Red opposes blue, blue opposes red, and so nothing gets done of any consequence because the two sides exist purely and solely to oppose each other.
You want me to argue with that?
No, I'm just, I know we think the same way on this, but it's like, that's what I think the average American is maddened by that.
And they're, it's come down to like six states, and both parties are trying to pander in those six states. It's come down to maybe 60 congressional districts and 10 Senate races.
Right.
And that is going to drive all of the legislation and executive orders and dialogue for the next three months. What do we have? 2.5 months. This
right.
election is coming right. fast.
Right.
Let me just say something about, because I don't think we got to the crux of what this
no,
CDC,
I interrupted you.
Yeah. The CDC order is.
Yep.
It is the taking of private property. And
right.
let me distinguish it from another eviction moratorium that happened earlier this summer. There was one in the Don't Cares Act that said if it's HUD, if you receive HUD money,
right.
like Section 8 money, to either to build the rental units or to help pay the rent or to guarantee the rent, if there's any federal government nexus, then the eviction moratorium would kick in. That was the one this summer that expired at the end of July, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a federal nexus, and it was passed by Congress. Okay. Differentiate that from what just happened at the CDC. There is no federal nexus. It doesn't matter if you built this house with your own hands and then decided and paid for it with your own money and decided to rent it to somebody. The federal government claims they have control over that rental contract now. And they're doing so without a vote of Congress, without a passing both chambers. And that's the danger here. And they're doing it at the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is, if this sticks, then private property is dead. Because
right.
the government is saying, we can come in and take control of your property
mm-hmm.
or assign ownership of your property, at least temporarily,
right.
to somebody else. That's what they're doing. The Fifth Amendment to the Constitution, a lot of people think only of it in the context of when you're in a courtroom and you don't want to implicate yourself, so you decide not to testify
mm-hmm.
In a case that would involve you or whatever. But the Fifth Amendment also, it's got some other stuff in there. And one of the things is, it says if the government takes your property,
right.
the government has to compensate you.
Right.
And if they use eminent domain, well, that's what they've done. The CDC.
Without the compensation.
Has done eminent domain without the compensation.
So in other words, it in order for this to really be quote unquote constitutional, because there is supposedly a crisis, the government's deemed there's a crisis. If you're going to force companies to forego what is duly theirs, you have to replace it.
Yeah, not just companies, but individuals.
Well, that's
the
what I mean.
The landlord may be
right.
an elderly couple,
right.
and they're renting out. They've downsized, okay,
right.
and they're renting out the house they raised their kids in to somebody else that's raising a family, okay,
right.
And they've still got a small mortgage, and they've still got upkeep on this rental property to pay. And the difference between the rent and the cost of keeping that house is their retirement income. Now they've just been deprived of retirement income for until the end of the year. By the way, the CDC doesn't say that you're excused from paying rent.
Right.
The implication here is that you're going to have to pay all the rent on January 1st.
Right.
Now, anybody that's ever rented property or rented out property knows that once you go 4 or 5 months, the probability of getting the rent from months ago,
you're not getting it.
Especially if it's somebody who's in a tight situation.
Right.
Then, by the way, if you're a small time landlord, let's say you've got one or two houses and you rent them out, and your renter has a financial situation, most of the time the landlord will work with that renter, because it's much better if you've got a good renter who's not tearing up the property, right?
Right, right.
To work with them through the issue. You don't need the federal government to come in, because, you know, if you evict somebody, now you've got to go find another renter. There's probably a lot of cleanup to do. The process takes, depending on what state that you're in, which is another thing we haven't talked about. These rental contracts are are governed by state laws, not federal laws.
Right.
But depending on the state you're in, or even the city you're in, evicting somebody can be a long and drawn out process. So what I'm saying is, if there's a situation where it made sense to defer somebody's rent payment instead of evicting them, I think in a lot of cases the renter and the landlord would come to that knowledge and make some sort of arrangement.
Yeah. So I kind of want to dig into this a little bit, because the side of, I mean, that bureaucracies are now doing these kinds of violations of property rights. And there, this is kind of an extension, by the way, of something that happened in the Obama administration that got a lot of play for us in talk radio and conservative news circles, but not in the mainstream media. And there was this operation, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. You and I talked about it a couple of times. But essentially, it was the Obama administration saying, you know what, we're going to decide which businesses can continue to do business, and then we're going to harass those that we think are immoral. And some of them were legitimately businesses that, you know, I wouldn't say, hey, these are great people, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them were actually legitimate businesses. So what got lumped in there was some types of porn, along with payday loan companies and gun manufacturers, gun sales, and ammunition manufacturers.
Did they call this Operation Choke Point?
That was it. That was it. Operation Choke Point. So the government goes around and starts calling banks and says to the banks, you probably shouldn't do business with these people. Threat implied. And so they stop. And I know that the fallout from this is still going on, because I worked.
It was huge. I have constituents who called me and, can you help me? I mean, these were legitimate businesses.
Yeah. And they were not, quote unquote, bad people. And I work in a business that's very closely related to the firearms industry. And so I still talk to people who have had fallout from this thing, where it's like, these are hardworking Americans who are providing a product that fills the need that is associated with a codified, God-given human right. And they got lumped up in that. So you had a bureaucracy that's essentially interfering with people's right to do business. Why not interfere with people's right to do business in this way? In other words, we've already got bureaucracies that are used to being able to say, Constitution, screw it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Why not do it?
Right.
This is another hypothetical question.
Right.
Or rhetorical. I mean, they just shouldn't do it. But let me just say, I think this goes beyond the Obama choke point.
Right.
I mean, they're taking control of private property. They're seizing.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying it's easier to do it when you've already set an
established. This is boiling the frog.
Right. Right.
And
that's why nobody's up in arms about this.
I know. The temperature just went up a degree.
Yeah.
And nobody is. Here's why nobody is up in arms about it. The Democrats like this policy.
Right.
Okay. They're not going to come out against it. And many in their base like this policy. They think there should be free rent.
Yeah.
They think that if you own property, you shouldn't be able to own property.
Right.
Right. That's what communism and socialism is. Instead of having private individuals own property, it's all going to be in the collective. Okay. So the Democrats aren't coming out against it ever.
Right.
And then on the right, once you dig down in this, what you realize is the White House supports this.
Right.
And who is going to come out in 70 days from an election
and criticize the president?
And criticize the president.
You and me?
By the way, I have the Trump antibodies.
Ah.
You know,
That's right.
I was the Trump Twitter antibodies, I
right,
should say.
Right.
I was viciously attacked by Trump's Twitter account. I was told that I was a third-rate grandstander. I should be thrown out of the party and various and sundry other things. And after that onslaught of mean tweets, I won my primary 82-18.
Right.
Okay, among Republicans. We have closed primaries in Kentucky. These weren't Democrats that went over and voted Republican in our primary.
Right.
So I tell people, I've got the Trump antibodies, just like I've got the COVID antibodies, which I really do have those too.
Right.
Which means I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh my God, I need to turn on my Twitter. Did he tweet against me?
Right.
Whereas almost all of my colleagues wake up with that fear.
Right.
That if they've said if they've spoken their mind, if they've said something for their constituents, where right. because they think what the president has done is at odds with their constituents' best interests, that they could be attacked on Twitter. And so
isn't that dumb though? Because like here's the difference. First of all, you're confident in yourself and you don't really give two rips, but
right, it may be more than
well, latter. And that's why I think people like you
give,
so much.
I give. Here's the difference, because I don't want people to take that out of context.
Right, sure.
I take my job seriously.
Yes.
But I don't take myself seriously.
Right. And I think that's key, but I think also you know Trump. You've been on the plane with him. Wait, let's back up.
I've been on the phone with him a lot.
On the phone.
I met with him in person.
Right.
And when people say, have you flown on Air Force One, I have to say, I haven't been on Air Force One, Marine One, or even Amtrak One.
Amtrak One.
I'm still waiting for like a cheap ticket on the back of Amtrak One. I'll ride in the caboose.
You didn't even get invited to the White House lawn for the acceptance speech. But the point is, you know him. And
actually, I did get invited.
Oh, you did?
That.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. But not on Air Force One. I just had to clarify. I haven't
right.
been on the plane with him. I have, I've had a dozen conversations with
sure.
him.
Sure. But the point is, you know him, and you realize that he's a hothead, and that he says things, and like his stuff that the insults.
Well, you don't have to know him to know that.
Right. But I mean, the insults he throws around are part of the game in his mind. Not necessarily that he truly personally believes that you're a bad person. You're in the game with him. You said
that's
something
correct.
That he disagrees with, so he's going to say something. That's how he plays the game.
It's a negotiation.
Yeah, and the Republicans who don't recognize that and decide to acquiesce to that are weak-kneed, spineless jellyfish.
Let me tell you, and I believe the president only respects the ones who
yes,
push back.
100%.
Look at who is his chief of staff. Mark Meadows.
Right.
Trump sent the same sort of tweets. By the way, Meadows has the Trump Twitter antibodies, mm-hmm. too. He developed them earlier than me, because when the Freedom Caucus voted against the health care sham, the repeal and replace health care sham, because it was – do you remember that?
Yep. We
voted 40 sometimes to repeal
right.
Obamacare.
Right.
And then we get the majority in the White House, and Paul Ryan – wants to replace mandates, penalties, subsidies, and bailouts with mandates, penalties, subsidies, and bailouts.
Right.
So the Freedom Caucus didn't go along with it. I didn't go along with it. And Trump attacked Mark Meadows on Twitter, and now Mark Meadows is his chief of staff. Same thing for Jim Bridenstine, who's the director of NASA.
Right.
Jim Bridenstine got crossways with the president. Now he's his head of NASA.
Right. So he gives you good jobs.
These are important jobs.
Actually, I've read a couple of books about Donald Trump prior to him being president. I just always thought he was an interesting character. And this lines up with his personality. So anybody who paid attention to him prior to him becoming the president, he tends to hire people that give him pushback but are successful in what they do. And in other words, mm-hmm. he respects results.
Yes.
And so he doesn't care what – he's going to say a bunch of stuff to your face, and you're going to say a bunch of stuff to his face. You're going to get fired if you're not getting results. You're going to get promoted if you get results. And it doesn't matter whether you say you're ugly and your toupee is on sideways. He doesn't care about that stuff.
By the way, I grew up in Eastern Kentucky. When I went to MIT, I'd never even visited the campus. I'd never been to Boston in my life or Cambridge. And the first day I was there, Leland, I walked through a crosswalk. We only had one stoplight in my town, okay, where I grew up. I walked through a crosswalk in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and a car honked at me. And I thought, oh, wow, there's somebody who knows me. And so I turned around and waved. I was like,
Kentucky.
Who else is from Kentucky? And I waved at this car. I'm 18 years old. And the reason I'm telling you this story is I went from thinking that everybody that honks their car at you knows you.
Right.
To realizing that. And by the way, Boston is different from New York. Like, I know that.
They call people up there massholes for a reason.
That's right. And. And I got to know that term when I moved to New Hampshire, because the mass holes would come up every Friday, come to the lakes, right?
Yeah.
To their lake houses. And everything got rude for two or three days. Like, I, right now, it's what, Labor Day weekend.
Right.
I'm almost like having flashbacks to all the the migration of mass holes right now. Can you imagine? They get out early, too. They have already left work. I-95 is clogged with mass holes right now, I guarantee. I'm in Kentucky, but I can envision this because I lived it. And the mass holes are trying to go to their Lake Winnipesaukee and all the other little lakes.
Right.
And they got their cabins up there, and they're just trying to escape Massachusetts. Anyways, what I'm telling you is I've lived in New England. I know the and I developed a certain appreciation for mass holes.
Right.
Okay? Like, some of my friends are mass holes.
Right, right.
Some of my best friends are mass holes. And I don't hold it against them. In fact, I've got friends from New York City. And the first person, it was a professor from New York City. I invented some technology at MIT, and I couldn't afford to pay for the patent. I didn't know how to patent it. So I let MIT patent it.
Right.
And they were going to assign the rights to me. And this professor from MIT, who I'm not going to call him out because actually his business is really big right now. He only had like 15 employees at the time. He was from New York City. And he told me, he said, well, you need to license your technology to me. And I said, well, I don't want to. And he said, well, I'll just take it. He said, I'll just go over to the licensing office. I'm a professor and you're a student. And I'll tell him to license it to me.
Huh.
And I walked out of there like, holy crap.
Right.
That guy is the most brutal,
right,
like vicious. And then I found out he's just from New York.
Right.
That's the way they operate.
Right.
He didn't have that kind of leverage.
Right.
Like,
he just said it. He blustered.
He said it, and it made me smarter.
Right.
And so before I signed the final document assigning my rights to the patent to MIT, in that very same meeting, they handed me the document licensing exclusively the patent to me.
Right.
But what the guy from New York, who I respect for his abruptness,
right,
and his straight and his forwardness and his aggressiveness, he helped me become stronger. But that is sort of, that's how I understand Donald Trump.
Right.
Because I have interacted with some people who grew up in New York City, and I know it's not right to characterize everybody that way.
It's a rough and tumble, you know. Joe Rogan's podcast, they talk about this, like, because he grew up in Boston, and they talk about how it's Irish and Italian immigrants.
Southie, yeah.
Yeah, and they came over here, and they've had to bruise their way. And there's vestiges of that left over in the society. You know, it's Kentucky has a specific type of culture. You know, California has a specific type of culture. Texas has a specific type of culture. The Northeast has a specific. Doesn't mean they're bad people. It means that we all have different ways of doing things and talking. And the press is having a heyday with that aspect of Trump's personality.
Let me tell you something else I learned in Boston. There, like in Eastern Kentucky, we were just all mixed up.
Right. Yeah.
You don't think of yourself as Irish or Italian or Jewish or whatever. We're just mixed up. And when I went to Boston, I found out that white people could be racist against other white people.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah. I was like, wait, you mean the Irish hate the Italians?
Right.
And it was like...
But isn't that humanity, though? And that's the problem. That's the problem, is we've got to get beyond that. And, you know, human beings are mean to each other. And
they are mean. And when you get into cities, people develop a shield.
Right.
Okay, when you're in the country, you let your shields down.
Yes, yeah. Well, but here's the thing. This is why I love the West so much, right? There's an independence out there that is, when you have to live in a place where it's difficult to get by, you tend to lean on your neighbors more.
Yes.
When you live in a place where it's not difficult to get by, you tend to distrust your neighbors more.
And it's also more tribal, I think, in cities than it is in the country.
Right.
Because there's a lot of anonymity.
Right.
And so you try to associate based on, oh, he's Irish, I'm Irish, we can be friends and work together.
Exactly.
I'm not eschewing that. I'm not proposing that's a good model.
No.
I'm just saying I saw this kind of stuff in Boston. I've met people from New York, and I'm trying to give all the rudeness that a lot of people associate
with Trump.
With Trump, I'm giving him a wider berth than I would if somebody here in Lewis County, if we were at a stoplight, because we have one, okay?
Right.
If we were at a stoplight and, I'm sorry, we're up to two. It keeps changing. Anyways, if we were at a stoplight and the light turned green and they laid on their horn behind me.
Right.
It wouldn't be road rage. The first thing you would do is you'd put the car in park and you'd turn around and you'd be like, for real?
Yeah.
You're gonna honk at me at a stoplight?
Right.
Like, what is, you must be having a bad day.
Right.
Whereas in the city, that would be acceptable, number one, because you wouldn't know the person behind you.
Right.
You wouldn't know their parents, where they grew up.
Right.
And it's acceptable. So anyways, that's why that's what Donald Trump does, and he does mean tweets.
Yep.
And it's his personality, but I've got the Trump Twitter antibodies, and that's why I am willing to call this policy out. Somebody needs to.
Right.
There are a few other congressmen. There's one other one, Warren Davidson in Ohio.
Right.
Has called it out. And also Rand Paul has called it out.
Yeah, I think it one of the things that hurts the Republican Party right now is the fact that when Trump does non-conservative things, which is quite often, they refuse to call him out or they make excuses for it. What that does is it makes the red team, blue team that much more dichotomous, because the blue team then goes, see, they're not really about what they say they're about. And in a way, they're right.
By the way, I'm still wearing the red jersey. I'm voting for Trump, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Do you think he'll win?
You know, I remember a year ago, people say, do you think he's going to win re-election? And people, this wasn't my phrase, but I started adopting it. I said, the stuff that's going to decide the election hasn't happened yet.
True.
And my goodness. Now
still
we've
probably
had,
hasn't.
We've had COVID. We've had, like, these riots. And now, you're right. That's what I'm saying. The thing that may decide this election probably hasn't happened yet.
Right. Yeah.
And probably this moratorium is part of conceding. And by the way, Trump's using the CDC to do this so that it's not totally on him.
Right.
And I'm going along with it. I'm blaming the CDC, not him.
Right.
Because I still have the red jersey on. But we're being honest here. And they're trying to forestall something that could affect this election.
Right. Right.
And but the thing that, you know, there may be some big riot. By the way, the Democrats have now changed their position on these riots.
Now they're condemning them.
They're not calling the shootings and the burnings peaceful protests anymore.
Right.
Mostly peaceful protests. They've switched because they've got their polls back.
Right. I have a question, though, for you about this, because we're talking about, you know, we're criticizing. I resent the choice that Americans have right now, the red team, blue team choice. I resent it because I'm
on the ballot, and there may be constituents in my district who resent the choice.
No, it's not. It's again, I would, you know, you're a different animal. Because you're here being honest about it. But I guess what I'm saying is, as an American, I resent the red team, blue team choice now. I've come to resent it because politics is more nuanced. And we're not talking about nuanced policy in America anymore. It literally is nothing but red team, blue team. And people are forced to make this choice where we go, okay, the CDC just violated property rights. This happened, this happened, this happened. But I still have to vote for Trump because the other guy will take away my gun rights, take away my money, you know, all this other stuff. So there's like, we're now voting for just these massive packages. It's kind of like Hulu versus Netflix. Both of them don't really have anything in particular I want to watch, but one of them might have a couple things that'll be more entertaining than the other. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and there's a solution.
Okay, give it to me, because that's what I think people want to hear.
This is only a problem, like the fact that you don't like your two choices. If you think you only have two choices because the only race that matters is the presidency.
Right.
It's not. It's not the only race that matters. There are 435 representatives who will be on the ballot
right.
in November. Every
right.
member of the House of Representatives is up for re-election every 2 years.
Right.
Every senator is up every 6 years. And so, but what happens is we get caught up in the Super Bowl of politics,
right.
which is the race for the presidency, and we think it's the only enchilada that matters. It's
right.
not just the big enchilada. It's the only one that matters.
Right.
And so people either become deeply depressed when their candidate doesn't win the White House,
right.
or they become overly expectatious
right.
when their person does win the White House, when the reality is that's not the way our founders wanted the government to work.
Right.
So don't be too upset at if you don't like the two choices for president, get involved in a congressional campaign.
Yeah.
Or here's another way to look at it. If the federal government weren't so darn big and pervasive into our lives, it would actually matter more, and in many cases it still does matter more,
right.
who your mayor is.
Yeah, I think the president should matter less to our lives. I agree with that. I just wish that we could go back to the days where we had two presidential candidates who were truly presidential people who were debating the substance of policy with regard to the size of government, as opposed to the debate we have now is, are we going to keep our system or are we going to throw it out and have a complete revolution? That's literally the debate we're having now, and it's terrifying. And yeah, if that's the debate we're having, I'm picking Team Red because I don't want to have a revolution. I want to keep the system we have now and make it better. So I'll put a placeholder in there until we can figure out how we can actually have those meaningful conversations.
Yes.
So, hey, real quick, before I let you go, I saw another member of the House, and I can't remember who it was, but you retweeted it last night, retweeting that we should pardon Snowden.
Matt Gaetz.
Matt Gaetz.
Matt Gaetz, yeah.
Is that starting to pick up some steam now?
I think so. Look, you've got Matt Gaetz, who hasn't just flown on Air Force One. He's probably been in the cockpit.
Yeah, he's about as close to Trump as you could get right now.
He is as close to President Trump as you can get. And if you don't believe that, watch the movie called Drain the Swamp on HBO.
Right.
He calls up the president. The president calls him up, and not just when he's mad or wants his vote,
right.
which is a lot of times when he calls me up, but when he wants my vote on something. But I think it is picking up steam. Also, Rand Paul has the president's ear, and
yep.
the president himself mentioned it,
right,
unprompted, in some conversation. So somebody else, I believe, has his ear on this.
Yeah.
And so now you've got two congressmen and a senator who are – and if this is one of the things that's just common sense and should be done that gets done before the election,
right.
it would help him.
You think so?
I believe.
Help him with people?
I believe. Look, most of the people who think Edward Snowden should be – locked up and the key thrown away are never Trumpers.
They're the Liz Cheney. Well, yeah.
yeah.
Never Trumpers or Liz Cheney's of the world.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. She's a never Trumper who has just sort of, for political convenience, hidden the fact.
Right. Right. Interesting. All right. Anything else we need to hit before we wrap up here? We've gone like 52 unbridled minutes here. We were just supposed to do 30.
Well, I don't know when your podcast is coming out, but. Okay, it's the end of the first week of September, and in the fourth or final week of September, September 30th, the government runs out of money.
Ah.
Like, I always talk about weapons of mass distraction.
Right.
And so we've had so many weapons of mass distraction deployed in the last few months that nobody is even fighting over the government shutdown.
Right.
Because they've just shut down the whole country.
Right.
So the prospect of a government shutdown isn't
that bad. Nobody cares.
Right. So what's going to happen? So here's what I'm telling you and your listeners of this podcast.
Okay.
You're hanging in the breeze for the last minute squeeze. There's going to be something happen in the next 3 weeks.
Right.
And this big giant freight train, this locomotive that under its own power can pull 1,000 boxcars behind it. Okay. That's the omnibus or CR bill that's going to pass in September.
Right.
Watch out for the cars they attach to it.
Okay.
Because nothing can stop that train. It's going to leave the station, and it's going to reach its destination. My prediction, even though this is not in the news, is it will be a CR, not an omnibus, which means cut, copy, paste of whatever last year's funding was. Which
right.
It will be a CR that will last, in this case, probably not until December. They usually like to kick the can down to December and then use the leverage of Christmas break to get
right.
congressmen to vote for stuff so they can go home to their families. I believe they will kick this can down the road to about March
okay.
of next year, because the Democrats are hoping that they take control of the White House and the Senate, and they want a bite at this apple. They would hate to waste the first year of their new regime locked in to a bill that was passed when Trump was president.
Right.
So I predict what's going to happen, and I mean, you can take this prediction to the bank. I would take this one to the bank, is that there will be a CR and that it will last until about the late first quarter of next year, and that there will be some unrelated stuff attached to it.
There'll be some legislative dingleberries attached to it.
Legislative dingleberries in lieu of another Don't Cares Act, possibly.
Right. Unbelievable. Well, we always appreciate the fact that you're willing to expose how Washington works for us. And so thank you for that. And have a great afternoon. And thanks for popping on with us out here on the Disruption Zone.
This has been fun as always, Leland.
Yep.
And I'm sure for the people who listen all the way through this podcast who write for newspapers, something bad will befall me due to the honesty and the candor that I exhibited here.
It'll probably have something to do about the big screen TV backgrounds that you
yes.
use for your media stuff, because that's what they'll harp on. So.
Something inconsequential.
Yep. Yeah.
All right.
Good to
Thanks,
talk to
Leland.
You. Thanks, Congressman Thomas Massey. I am Leland Conway. Thanks to my co-executive producer, Cameron Mills, and co-host Cameron Mills. Also, thanks to Dynamics Productions in Lexington, Kentucky, and JP Web Design for all their awesome help. Follow me on Twitter, at Leland Show, and at The Disruption Zone, and on Instagram, at GreatlyLondo, and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. I am Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.